thought about throwing. He's going to run it in for the touchdown. Taysom Hill, his first touchdown of the season. Will Lutz, 36-yard attempt. On the way. Nailed it. Saints by 3.
Chargers find another way to lose a close game. Man, the Chargers, they're just right there. Justin Herbert, first rookie to throw for 4 touchdowns in a Monday Night Football game. He played well. Chargers up 20-3. It was all there for him, and they missed a 50-yard field goal, hit the upright, doinked, and came back in at the end of regulation. That would have won the game, and then you kind of felt like the Saints were going to win, and they did. Saints come back from a 17-point deficit to beat the Chargers. Final score, Saints 30 and the Chargers 27. More NFL to come, plus interesting, Dustin and I were just chatting about talking about the greatest players at different positions in sports. Do you know whose birthday it is today?
I don't.
Jerry Rice.
Jerry Rice, okay.
58th birthday today.
We talked about a lot of guys yesterday.
I know, so I know. Yeah.
That would make sense, though.
58th birthday, so we'll go through some of the numbers of Jerry Rice. And we're going to talk wide receivers today in regards to the Chiefs with an injury at wide receiver, how the Chiefs might have messed up in the draft in regards to missing out on a great wide receiver. And then we'll talk about the greatest wide receiver in NFL history, and it's not even close. Okay, but first, local sports, Dusty.
Yeah, volleyball coming up today for area teams. The El Saline Triangular coming up here this evening for Beloit, as the Lady Trojans will play El Saline at 5 o'clock and Sacred Heart approximately 6 o'clock, and fans can watch those matches on the Beloit Trojan channel at ncksports.com here tonight. So if you can't make it there for the El Saline Triangular, it's right there on the online video stream. St. John's Tipton is at Thunder Ridge tonight. Also, Southern Cloud Quad, Southern Cloud Lakeside, Natoma, and Sylvan Lucas competing there in Miltonvale. Rock Hill's hosting Chase. Pike Valley is at Lincoln. And Phillipsburg Triangular with Smith Center, Phillipsburg, and Great Bend coming up as well this evening, beginning at 5 o'clock. So that's what's going on as far as local volleyball today. Also, the NCAA Cross Country Meet taking place in Minneapolis today, and that starts at 4 o'clock this afternoon in Minnie. So Beloit competing there, and obviously all the NCAA Cross Country teams here this afternoon.
Maybe you mentioned, but the volleyball for Beloit tonight is on live video stream at ncksports.com via the Beloit Trojan channel. What's your biggest concern for the Chiefs after 5 games? Biggest concern.
Offensive line is like a
boom.
Pretty
that's
big
easy.
Concern right
I think,
now.
I think it's an easy question to answer.
Yeah.
You look at the Chiefs offensive line and how it formed against the Raiders, who don't have a great pass rush, by the way, and they didn't have to blitz. And Mahomes was running for his life. Remmers didn't play well at left guard. Mitchell Schwartz, maybe age is catching up to him at right tackle. He wasn't great. He was okay. Andrew Wiley, right guard, wasn't great. I've always said that you can pretty much plug different guys in. Wiley, Tardif, was similar. I mean, I don't see a big drop-off there, but that also means they don't have a great guard there. Center, Austin Ryder, is undersized, does a decent job. Fisher's your best lineman at left tackle, and he was having a hard time the other day as well. And, you know, Max has said it before in regards to the Chiefs spending money. I'll spin what Max has said. Max is a loyal listener to the Sports Ticket. So, Max, if you're listening out there, I guess you can text me and let me know you're listening, but I'm guessing you probably do. If he disagrees with me, he'll text me anyway, which is fine. I respect that. When Max talked about how the Chiefs, instead of giving Mahomes all this money, he should take less money, and then they need to, you know, protect him. And I kind of laughed about that because Mahomes should get as much money as he possibly can. He's worth more than he's even making now. He's worth more than his contract's going to be, which sounds crazy, but in the scheme of what the NFL is and what he brings to the table, Mahomes is worth every penny. Now, to go along with Max, what he was saying, though, is when you, and this is what I said about Chris Jones, I was not a big fan of signing Chris Jones to a long-term deal. You know that.
Mm-hmm.
And Chris Jones did not play well the other day. He's not good against the run. And the Chiefs were better on the Chiefs defensively were better without Chris Jones the other day, and of course when he missed the previous game against Patriots. Now, granted, that was Brian Hoyer. You know, Derek Carr is better than Brian Hoyer. I think we can agree on
yes.
that. But I do understand, because my thought process of Chris Jones is you don't spend that money on Chris Jones, you spend it in other places. And now when you look at it, certainly you would say spend it on the offensive line. Take that Chris Jones money and spend it on the offensive line. And you can, hindsight's 20/20. And at the time, I said, I don't think you re-sign Chris Jones this big deal. I just don't think it's, you know, he's missed a few games with injury. He's banged up. I know he's a really great player. He's really good in, against the pass, but against the run, he's a little bit of a liability at times. So I was okay with Mahomes clearly getting his money. I didn't even know about the restructured deal and giving more money to Kelsey because he's 30 now, but they did that. I'm like, okay, whatever. You got Watkins at a cheaper rate, but still $6 million for Watkins, who I think is a much more important piece to this offensive puzzle than people give it credit for. More on that in a moment. But I think Max was onto something from the standpoint that you put so much money. He was focusing on the quarterback. You put so much money in the quarterback that leaves you not a lot of money to spend elsewhere. I would agree with him to an extent, except what I'd say is it's one thing to have a big contract for Clark, then a huge contract for Mahomes. But then you start dishing out huge contracts for everybody else. And then you start to wonder about, and we asked about this before the season, does that kill the hunger for this team? When you get your rings and hear how great you are and you get all your money and everybody's happy, nobody's holding out, what is there to prove? Now, I think this team is motivated, don't get me wrong, but I do think they're looking to flip a switch. I don't think they obviously got up for the Raiders. The Raiders played well, give them credit. But at the same time, the Chiefs, I think, came off the emotional wins of the Ravens. The Patriots didn't play great. They have the Bills on the horizon, which they thought were going to be a Thursday night game, and the Bills maybe are the biggest challenger of the Chiefs now in the AFC. And so I think it was natural that the Chiefs looked past the Raiders, a team they owned, and once they got that pick by Breland, went up 14-3, and then they're up 21-10, I think they relaxed. And I think they thought they were going to win, just like every other Chiefs fan, and probably even every Raider fan thought, to be quite honest with you. And to the Raiders' credit, they're better than they were last year. They've drafted well. That Khalil Mack trade was just vilified by the media about how horrible a trade it was. And I say this about every trade. You can't grade a trade as soon as it's made. You have to let it play out if you're truly going to grade the trade correctly. The Raiders, that trade has actually helped them. They've been able to get more draft picks. They've addressed the defensive ends with Crosby. They've got a, in free agency, got a right tackle, drafted a left tackle to help on the offensive line. They got a safety who's nasty in Abram, who, you know, maybe a little dirty, which that fits the Raiders' personality, doesn't it? So they've drafted fairly well. And then, oh, yeah, they got the best receiver in the draft with the most speed in Henry Ruggs, who is a guy the Chiefs were interested in, believe it or not. So they parlayed those draft picks. Remember, they had three first-round picks this year, and part of that was the Khalil Mack trade. So you can sit here right away, initially say, oh, what a horrible trade that is. You don't know. Mack could get hurt for the Bears, and then the Raiders get all the draft picks. Now, Mack's done fine in Chicago. Have the Bears won anything of substance since he's been there? No.
No.
Their problem's been quarterback. And they traded from 3-2 to get Trubisky the year that the Chiefs got Mahomes at 10. And Watson went at 12. So the Raiders have done things the right way. It's a process. Take some patience. The Raiders are ascending to a better level than a year ago. They're not at the Chiefs level yet. I know you may say as a Raiders fan listening out there, well, we just beat them. Yeah, I know. But if you beat the Chiefs in Vegas, now we can let's talk about how the Raiders are at the Chiefs level. I think the Chiefs overlooked the Raiders. I think the Raiders, it was their Super Bowl. Do you know they took a victory lap around Arrowhead with their buses?
Yeah.
Now, come on, man. I mean, that shows a lot of respect for the Chiefs, actually, because they can't beat them, and they finally beat them first time in 8 years at Arrowhead, and they had to take a victory lap around Arrowhead. You don't think the Chiefs have that as bulletin board material next time they play the Raiders, which is going to be November 22nd, Sunday night game on NBC in Vegas? Are you kidding me? Yeah. We'll talk about the Raiders being at the Chiefs level if the Raiders win that game, because that's going to tell you whether, and the Raiders will be at home. They should win that game. If the Raiders are legitimate playoff contenders and are at the Chiefs level, they will beat the Chiefs next time because they'll be at home, correct?
Yes.
Okay. So the Chiefs did spend a lot of money, a lot of pieces, and kept a lot of guys, re-signed guys. And I think the question is there this feeling of complacency in regards to, listen, we're going to be fine. We're going to win this division. The Broncos aren't any good. The Broncos have injuries. The Chargers, you know, they challenge us, but they do what they do, lose close games like they did again last night. They find ways to lose close games. And then the Raiders, well, we own the Raiders, and yeah, it's a blimp on the radar. Don't worry. We weren't up for them. We'll be ready for them next time. Now, I think for Chiefs fans to be concerned or Chiefs themselves to be concerned is if they get swept by a team in the division. That's when you're going to start to worry, because that means that team can win the division, which means the Chiefs could be a wild card. And obviously, no home field advantage. And, you know, there are seven teams that are going to make playoffs this year. They're adding a team to each conference. That gives the Raiders a better chance to make the playoffs as well, or the Chargers still to make the playoffs. So I think the Chiefs are fine. But I will say that offensive line really concerns me. The Raiders don't have the greatest pass rush, and they were putting pressure on Mahomes all game long. That's got to be a concern because the Bills are better defensively than the Raiders. It's not even close.
Yeah.
The Bills are much better than the Raiders defensively. The Broncos, still decent defensively. The Jets, not all that. Carolina's okay. Tampa Bay's defense is all right. I mean, there's not, like, great defenses looking down the line on the Chiefs' schedule, but at the same time, the Raiders' defense wasn't great coming in the other day, and that was at Arrowhead. So I don't think there's any doubt. The biggest concern, the Chiefs' defense, I'm not going to freak out about that. They had breakdowns. They had communication errors. They can fix that. That can be fixed.
Yeah.
But getting just beat up on the line of scrimmage, like I think the defensive front, I think it was lack of motivation. I think Chris Jones and the defensive front didn't bring it. And that's on Chris Jones and his teammates on the front, defensive front. And he even admitted after the game that, hey, we just didn't play well. We got to be much better. That can be fixed. I think they'll be all right there. I think the secondary will communicate more. You got Breland back and you got Ward. I mean, who didn't play great the other day? Fenton, I think, has played well at times. I think they'll be fine. They get Snead back, would be great. I don't know how long he's going to be out, the rookie, but with the broken collarbone. But he has speed and played well a couple picks. And you got Matthew and Thornhill. I think the Chiefs are okay defensively. I mean, yeah, they're going to give up points. They're going to give up yards from time to time. No, no question. It's the league that we live in. But the biggest concern, without question, to me, other than injuries, which is just a given for any team, is the offensive line. How do you fix that overnight? Like, there's no answer on the bench. If there was, they already played.
Yeah.
Well, Osimile's out for the year, probably, with torn tendons in both knees, which is just crazy. And he played well, but he wasn't great at left guard. He looked good in the first game of the year. He's a better run blocker than pass blocker. Wiley's a better pass blocker than run blocker. Ryder's undersized at center. And Fisher and Swartz have not been as good as they probably are or can be, although Swartz might be, you know, age catching up to him. There's nobody on that bench. Mike Remmers isn't the answer. I mean, he can come in and fill in, but there's a reason he's a journeyman offensive lineman.
Yeah.
Daniel Kilgore is a backup center. He only plays center. Who they got? Nick Allegretti? Dude, if Allegretti was ready, they would have maybe not even picked up Osimile.
Yeah.
So exactly. I think the Chiefs' biggest concern, without a doubt, by far, is offensive line, and that's really the worst part to be bad at right now because that's the group of guys that protect your $500 million quarterback.
Yes.
So Max is out there going, I told you, you need to spend money on your linemen. You don't have to because the Patriots have proven you don't have to. They protected a Hall of Fame, maybe the greatest of all-time quarterback for years with no high draft picks, hardly at all, and didn't go out and spend tons of money in free agency. They coached up guys. They drafted guys later. The Chiefs have a Pro Bowl left tackle. Mitchell Schwartz should be a Pro Bowl right tackle. It should have been last year. He wasn't somehow. Those guys are supposedly Pro Bowlers. Your guards are questionable, especially with the injury of Simile. Your center's undersized. They lost Tardif, which I don't think is a big thing people talk about. I'm like, no, he wasn't great last year anyway. Dorsey gave him that long-term deal. So the Chiefs, remember, picked up Steve Wisniewski off the street in week 3 or 4 last year. So maybe there's a guy out there the Chiefs can pick up off the street that can do a decent job. But there's no question that the Chiefs have to be concerned on the offensive line, especially if Schwartz and Fisher aren't playing as well as they can.
Yeah.
That's guys you counted on to be good to go this year. And if they're not, now you got pressure on the weak side and on behind, on the edge, and in front of Mahomes, and then right in front of him, Austin Ryder undersized if your guards are having problems. And then on top of that, if they're not good at run blocking and Allaire can't run, then you become a one-dimensional team, which the Chiefs are more pass than run anyway. We know that. Maybe you got to throw a few more screens. I know Andy Reid likes to throw screens to slow down that pass rush to help your offensive line. But I don't think there's any question the offensive line is the biggest concern.
Absolutely.
Especially when 15's behind that offensive line.
Yeah, I mean, it's I don't know what you do. I mean,
you just got to get better with the group you have.
You got to get better for one, or you got to find a Stefan Wisniewski or something like that. And I just don't know if and it doesn't help, like we talked about with Osimile going down, who, you know, at times has been pretty good this year.
But in his career, has been injury prone.
Yeah, and so that's just adding to the list of issues with it. So, and, you know, they could have spent, I don't even know if they could have found anybody to spend money on.
Right.
On the offensive line this offseason.
Mm-hmm.
So that's another thing that you got
to
look at.
Well, they did find one person to spend
a little bit of money on, and Osimile, and he got hurt. So.
Right. Right.
And Remmers was well before those contracts went out.
And keep in mind, Niang, they drafted third round at TCU, could have been a contributor. Yeah. He opted out. Tardif opted out.
Exactly.
They brought in Osimile. Had those two not opted out, I don't think Osimile had been in there anyway. But that's a concern. The other concern with the Chiefs is injuries, which with any team, you have injuries. You know, the big one to me is Watkins now. Watkins with a hamstring. And I hear Chiefs fans, and I think the Chiefs fans that don't really, aren't diehard, really watch the Chiefs very intensely. If you're more of a laid-back Chiefs fan, you say big deal. You look at the numbers, you go big deal. Sammy Watkins is a security blanket for Patrick Mahomes and the Chiefs. Mm-hmm. And he's the guy that opens things up. He's basically a guy you can check down to, a possession receiver. And that's a guy with speed, by the way, still has speed. And that opens things up because you think about the Raider game the other day. Tyreek Hill was going deep, right? Tyreek Hill's not really an over-the-middle type of guy. He can be at times, but he's a deep threat. He goes deep. Well, the only guy left to cover underneath with Watkins out is Kelce. So now you can double him. Mm-hmm. Now, I think the other thing the Chiefs could do is get Hilaire more involved in the passing game. And I think that can happen because he's a rookie. He's only played 5 games. I think that's a wild card there. I think Pringle is a guy. I don't understand why Pringle doesn't play a little bit more. I think he does some good things. I think he does better than DeMarcus Robinson, to be quite honest with you. Mecole Hardman, I don't know. I mean, that guy needs to step it up. That kid should be – he needs to be the number two receiver on this team. What I mean is a number two wideout. You know, obviously, Kelce is one of your top receivers. But Hill is wide receiver one. Wide receiver two, who's that? You know, it's Watkins. But when Watkins is hurt, who's going to be wide receiver two? Watkins probably won't be back next year, although we thought he wouldn't be back this year. But eventually Watkins won't be here. And Hardman, I think, was insurance for Tyreek Hill when he had his issues off the field last year. It was also insurance for Watkins, knowing they weren't going to pay him. And then he took a lot less money to stay for 1 year, $6 million this year. But wide receiver has to be a bit of a concern from the standpoint of who's going to step up. If Tyreek Hill or Travis Kelce gets hurt right now, you suddenly have one weapon. And now you're a lot easier to defend. And we've seen the Chiefs without Tyreek Hill, how it changes their offense because he stretches the field. So now you can double or bracket Kelce. So the Chiefs are going to have to make some adjustments with Watkins out, whether Pringle can be that guy to develop in that spot. DeMarcus Robinson isn't, to me, a possession receiver over the middle. I think he's not a number two receiver. Mecole Hardman isn't either. And that leads me to wide receivers in the draft. And this really makes me really upset when I start to think back at this draft. Because the immediate reaction of Mecole Hardman last year's draft was what? He's Tyreek Hill's replacement. Mm-hmm. That's what everybody thought. And then we presented the idea that, no, he's probably Sammy Watkins' replacement. Then Watkins came back, which may be part of the reason they brought Watkins back is because Hardman wasn't ready for the wide receiver two position, okay? But last year's draft, the Chiefs, the wide receivers, Marquise Brown went to the Ravens at 25. He was the first receiver off the board. N'Keal Harry went to the Patriots, last pick of the first round. Debo Samuel went to the Niners. He's a young and promising wide receiver at 36. That's the second round. And then A.J. Brown of Ole Miss went to the Titans at pick 52. And then Mecole Hardman went to the Chiefs with pick 56 in round two last year. And I'm going to go to another guy that they could have had. And he slid in the draft, and I was surprised when he slid in the draft when I was watching it. D.K. Metcalf. Mm-hmm. D.K. Metcalf was the final pick of the Seattle Seahawks. He had all the physical tools. He's fast. The question was some things in regards to his attitude, mentality, this and that, when he was at Ole Miss, okay? And the Chiefs had taken, obviously, they took, if they weren't worried about Tyreek Hill, well, I'm sure they were worried, but they drafted him. They apparently didn't feel comfortable to take D.K. Metcalf in the second round, or they were just focused on speed only. And you sit here and you look at this draft, Mecole Hardman has not panned out so far, and there's time for him to figure it out, but he's not a guy that's going to take a lot of hits. Metcalf can. Have you seen DK Metcalf? Mm-hmm. He's a physical specimen freak. Can you imagine him in a Chiefs uniform? Well, guess what? You could have had him. He was available at 56. The Chiefs didn't even have to trade up to get him. He was right there, and I think you're going to think and track this the next few years. DK Metcalf continues to progress as he is. He's the Seahawks, really, his number one receiver, along with Lockett. And that makes, you know, Wilson's job so much better. He had the game-winning touchdown the other day against Minnesota. DK Metcalf is a guy the Chiefs could have had. Can you imagine him in this offense instead of Mecole Hardman? Now suddenly you do have your number two wide out. Now maybe you don't bring Watkins back. You don't bring Watkins back, maybe you save money, and that money's spent on somebody on the offensive line. You see how this works, domino effect? Mm-hmm. And I know it's easy in hindsight, okay? Because when they drafted Hardman, I'm like, okay, fine. I thought it was too high, but okay, fine. We'll see how it works out. And he is electric when he catches the ball, but he is really a Tyreek Hill Jr. type of guy. And if Tyreek ends up getting hurt, maybe Hardman can slide in that spot and be the burner to stretch the field. And yeah, he had a kick return, big kick return against the Texans to get things jump started in the playoffs last year, and he can return kicks. Yeah, so can Tyreek Hill. DK Metcalf can too, by the way, but the Seahawks choose not to have him do that. That's something we're going to look at, I think, down the line and go, wow, the Chiefs got a DK Metcalf, and they totally went with Hardman instead, who some people said was a third-round grade, not a second-round pick.
Yeah.
And do you wonder if the Chiefs reached a little bit because of the Tyreek Hill situation at the time.
No, I still think that.
And the concerns about Sammy Watkins, about maybe bringing him back. And that combination made them go, we got to have speed. And if we lose Watkins and or Hill, well, then we got to have speed with Hardman. And they overlooked Metcalf because they had a few little red flags, which I'm not saying, you know, next year Metcalf could, you know, get himself kicked out of the league and it might still look like the right thing. That's why I'm not going to judge it right now. But as of now, the Chiefs missed out, as did 63 of the other picks that could have had DK Metcalf.
Well, and you know, you talk about the hindsight. You know, a lot of people said that about Tyler Lockett, too. You know, the Seahawks got Tyler Lockett where they got him. They picked him in the third round, right?
So which was good value.
Two, like, 32 teams passed on him twice, including the Seahawks, right?
Yeah, Seahawks passed on Metcalf once.
Mm-hmm. And so it's like everybody's like thinking that, and I say that because a lot of Chiefs fans always try to tell me they should have drafted Tyler Lockett, right? Mm-hmm. That they should. And it's like, you guys don't understand where Tyler Lockett was when the NFL draft process started.
Mm-hmm.
He was fifth, sixth, maybe seventh round. He went to the combine. He went to the Senior Bowl, did all these great things, and vaulted himself up to the third round. Nobody's going to reach in first or second because that's what they thought it was a reach. So, you know, DK Metcalf's a guy that maybe had the skill set but didn't have the mindset, you know, that the teams wanted him to have. And, and so, you know, you can always look back at hindsight. But, yeah, it will be frustrating if, you know, the Chiefs could have had that guy and then they didn't get him. But, like we say, a lot of teams passed on him. At least once, every team passed on him. And so, you know, it's never an exact science.
Right.
And you try to scout and try to get the best guys you can, but it is frustrating if you do miss out on a guy. There's no question about that.
DK Metcalf is 6'3", 228 pounds, and runs a 4.33 40.
It's pretty good.
So just imagine Mecole Hardman with muscles and size.
And height, yeah.
And height. That Chiefs could have had him. Now, the thing about Hardman, Metcalf was he had a neck injury, had a foot injury his freshman year in college, a neck injury, and then he came out and they were concerned. And here's an interesting article, and this is always fun to read this stuff after the fact. Like, I remember, you know, Emmitt Smith's too small, Barry Smither's too small, Jerry Rice is too slow, Steve Largent is too slow, and those guys are all Hall of Famers. There's an article by Bleacher Report, 2019, all sizzle, no steak, DK Metcalf is a first-round flop waiting to happen. Well, he was a second-round pick, actually, almost a third-round pick. Said he's a flop waiting to happen. He's now maybe one of the best receivers in the National Football League. So it just goes to show you all these people that talk and think they know what they're talking about. Before these guys make an NFL, they don't know. Completely dead wrong. There's all, of course, everybody. A lot of people were saying Mahomes was a train wreck of a pick. Why'd they trade up? They should have taken Watson, and he's just going to throw a whole bunch of interceptions. Mike Golick said his words, and he admitted it. I mean, hey, I'm completely wrong about that guy. So it is fun when guys prove other people wrong. But the Chiefs could have had DK Metcalf, and they could have had him in the second round at 56, and who would have really been mad about that? I mean, because he wouldn't have been – he's a first-round value, but he was in the second round because of an injury concern. But the Chiefs apparently didn't feel good enough or didn't think he was the right fit. And I'm just sitting there going, darn it. Because I don't know if Hardman's going to turn into a really good receiver.
The thing that Hardman doesn't have that Tyreek does is the athleticism and ability to go up and get a football.
Hardman won't ever have that,
I don't think. No. I mean, that's rare for a guy Tyreek Hill's height to be able to do what he does in that aspect.
No doubt.
And so that's one thing I don't think he will ever have from the standpoint of what Tyreek does for the team.
I agree with you. Speaking of wide receivers, the greatest wide receiver to have ever played the game is having a birthday today. He's 58. So we were talking about this yesterday, Dusty and I, after the show, about the GOAT arguments. You know, LeBron versus Michael Jordan, Brady versus Peyton Manning there for a while. You can do this all the time. We were talking about Nadal and Federer. You know, Nadal is the greatest on clay, but is he really the greatest tennis player of all time when 13 of his 20 majors are on one surface? Discuss amongst yourselves, whatever. And Dusty, you brought up that you had a conversation. Somebody was trying to tell you that Jerry Rice wasn't the greatest wide receiver of all time.
It's a long-going conversation.
Was that person high? Was that person drunk? Because, I mean, I don't...
This is a person that likes to argue to argue. We'll just put it that way.
Just because you weren't old enough to see the guy play in his prime doesn't mean he didn't exist. That's the problem I have with younger generations. And it's true of my generation as well. You know, I told you yesterday, you automatically talk about Jordan versus LeBron. Why isn't anybody talking about Oscar Robertson or Wilt Chamberlain or Kareem Abdul-Jabbar? Why aren't people talking about those guys? The all-time leading scorer in NBA history is Kareem Abdul-Jabbar.
Yeah.
So why aren't we talking about those guys? Why aren't they in the discussion? Because they're older. They're in the rearview mirror. And the media now don't have those old guys to really help support that argument for those guys, right?
Yes.
You know, none of us and the people you argue with saw Oscar Robertson or Pistol Pete Maravich play.
Mm-hmm.
So we have no idea how great they were. Yeah, well, they couldn't be athletically as good as today. Well, duh. But the people today, if they were back then and didn't have all the supplements they can take and all the training and this and that and weights and lifting, they wouldn't be what they are today either. So it's kind of a waste of time when it comes to argument. But you told me yesterday that somebody was trying to tell you that Jerry Rice wasn't the greatest wide receiver in the history of the game, and I almost had a heart attack. That's like trying to say that Rafael Nadal is not the greatest tennis player on clay. You just want to argue to argue. I mean, there's not a single person that's respected that covers the National Football League that would agree that Jerry Rice is not the greatest receiver of all time.
No.
I mean, the proof is in the pudding, man. Jerry Rice's birthday today, he's 58 and still in great shape, by the way.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, he's catching passes for Brett Favre in TV commercials, which, by the way, in that commercial, how in the hell does Rice and Favre get on the same team against a bunch of scrubs? Who drafted that situation? Wouldn't you make sure that Rice is on a separate team? Oh, that's right. It's for commercials. I get it. Jerry Rice, when he came out of college, Mississippi Valley State, they talked about how he's too slow. 4.740. He was clocked like a 4.5, but they found out later it was a 4.7, which is slow. Faster than me and you.
For that position,
but for that position,
very slow.
Yeah. Steve Largent was a 4.6, 4.7, 4.8 guy. And all Jerry Rice did is set a whole bunch of records. Do you know he has over 100 NFL records?
Yeah, it's insane.
But he's not the greatest receiver in the history of the game. NFL Network did a whole top 100 players of all time. Jerry Rice came in at number 2 all time as a player, receiver.
Any position.
Jerry Rice has 1,549 career receptions. That's 171 more than Larry Fitzgerald. Now, Fitzgerald maybe could catch him when he plays a few more years. Maybe so, okay? Jerry Rice has 22,895 career yards. That's almost 6,000 yards more than Larry Fitzgerald.
Yeah.
He has 197 career touchdown receptions, which is 41 more than the second-place record set by Randy Moss. 41 more than Moss. He has 208 total touchdowns, 33 ahead of Emmitt Smith, and he's a receiver. Running backs always scored more touchdowns back then.
Yes.
He threw a touchdown pass. He ran for touchdown passes. He has 1,256 career points, making him the highest-scoring non-kicker in NFL history. And he was also clutch. He had 3 big catches on that drive when Montana and Rice tore the hearts out of Bengal fans everywhere, 20-16 with that final drive. And guess who was the Super Bowl MVP? It wasn't Joe Montana. It was Jerry Rice. And here's another one. Jerry Rice played 20 NFL seasons. He missed 17 games and 14 when he blew out his knee in Monday Night Football in 1997. The other 3 was because of a strike-shortened season. The guy was a workout freak, a complete freak of nature. And listen to these seasons for Jerry Rice. You ready for this? 1986, 86 catches, 1,570 yards, average 18 yards a catch, 15 touchdowns. 1987, 1,000 yards receiving, 22 touchdown receptions. 88, 1,300 yards, average 20 yards a catch. 89, average 18 yards a catch, 17 touchdowns, 1,500 yards receiving. 1990, 100 receptions, 1,500 yards, 13 touchdowns. 91, 1,200 yards, 14 touchdowns. 92, 1,200 yards, 10 touchdowns. My God, he's a robot. 93, 1,500 yards, 15 touchdowns. 94, 112 catches, 1,500 yards, 13 touchdowns. Oh, I'm not done. 1995, 122 catches, 1,848 yards, and 15 touchdowns. And guess what? Everybody knew he was going to get the ball, and he still got it. He got double-teamed. They still got it to him. 108 catches and 96 or 1,254 yards. And then he had the torn knee ligaments. Mm-hmm. And the first year back after that horrible injury, what'd he do? 82 catches, 1,200 yards, and 9 touchdowns. Oh, and with the Oakland Raiders, when he went to Oakland, when his career was supposedly going downhill, he had 83 catches, 1,100 yards, 9 touchdowns in 2001. In 2002, he had 92 catches, 1,200 yards, and 7 touchdowns. How is he not the best receiver of all time? Shoot, he's one of the best players of all time. Forget wide receiver. So anybody that wants to give you some argument that Jerry Rice isn't the greatest wide receiver of all time, they, let's just say it and call it what it is. They don't know what they're talking about.
No.
They
absolutely
don't. They
not.
Just want to argue to argue. They're the same people that are going to tell you that the greatest Laker of all time is LeBron James. And they're going to say that Rafael Nadal is the second best player on clay. And they're going to say that Muhammad Ali wasn't that great of a heavyweight champion. They're just going to argue to argue. I mean, come on, man. Understand what's in front of you. Jerry Rice played 20 NFL seasons at an extremely high level.
Yes.
And everybody knew he was going to get the ball, and they couldn't stop it. Then I hear the whole arguments about greatness, right? Well, played in a great system. Well, duh. Any great player played in a great system. Jordan played with a triangle. LeBron plays in great systems that fit him. The offense is designed around LeBron. If you win championships, the system is part of it. Okay? I don't care what sport you're in. It is part of the equation.
Well, Joe Montana was a system quarterback.
So,
well, Jerry Rice, he had two Hall of Famers. He had Steve Young and Joe Montana.
Maybe, did you ever think that the reason they're Hall of Fame and quarterbacks is because they had Jerry Rice?
Yeah, and maybe you ever think the about other that way around. One? Yeah. Maybe we're what like, ever, oh, what hey, other, what I got other, Jerry Rice to play with.
What other NFL Hall of Fame wide receiver did the 49ers have when Montana and Young were quarterback? Let me raise my hand for everyone. Zero! It was Jerry Rice. Did they have weapons? Yeah, they had weapons. Jerry Rice was the weapon. The biggest weapon. And this coming from a guy that was too slow to play in this league.
Yeah.
But a guy with tremendous work ethic. For crying out loud, wide receivers still today follow his training regiment. They do the hill. Have you seen the hill? I get tired looking at the hill, let alone trying to climb that hill. And they'll do it tons of times. I believe DK Metcalf's one of those that did this. Mm-hmm. We were just talking about. Guys that want to be the best at wide receiver, they make one phone call, and that's to Jerry Rice. He and the guy stayed healthy. You talk about LeBron James being so great and so durable. Jerry Rice was as durable as you've ever seen at any position.
Mm-hmm.
And by the way, he didn't just go on fly patterns. He came over the middle. He played. He came. He ran every route possible. And then he was so slow that he carried the ball 63 times in his career and averaged 7.5 yards a run, and scored touchdowns on reverses. But yet he was so slow.
Yeah.
But, you know, he wasn't slow. He was quick. He wasn't the super fastest guy in the world. But he was smart. He knew how to read a hole running the football.
And because he wasn't a burner, he was the best route runner.
Absolutely. And he knew he had to work on
question.
It. He knew he had to work on it.
And he worked, and he became.
His rookie year, he had drops. He worked on it.
Yeah.
Hardly ever dropped the ball after that.
Yeah. And, I mean, you can say that he doesn't have some of the skills of one certain wide receiver that are the same. I'm fine with that. Maybe because he just doesn't have the height to do it too, maybe. Like if you were like a Randy Moss going up and high pointing the ball, you know, Jerry Rice didn't do a lot of that. He didn't have to do a lot of that. You know, he was beating guys because of the routes that he was running and burning defensive backs and making it look easy. But he's not fast enough to play in the game.
Jerry Rice also had a motor. Speed. Randy Moss didn't have a motor. He quit and didn't run on plays, didn't do plays, and that's why he got shuffled around in the league.
Yeah.
And he's a
guys
great
like
talent.
T.O., you know,
great talent.
Maybe
don't
you could say T.O.'s a better, you know, possession receiver, come across the middle and take hits or whatever, and you might have an argument, but you don't have an argument of Jerry Rice wasn't afraid of that. He's going to catch the ball wherever it comes to him.
Do you know who T.O.'s mentor was?
Jerry Rice.
Jerry Rice.
Absolutely.
You know, somebody can say, well, Steve Young had Terrell Owens. He's a Hall of Famer. Yeah, that was at the end of Rice's career in San Francisco, and he helped pass the torch to help Terrell be as good of a receiver as he was. Jerry Rice is the best wide receiver. People just want to argue. Jerry Rice, the greatest wide receiver of all time. Can we agree on that?
100%. Most people do. You can't. You won't find.
There's not a single person that works in the NFL is going to tell you he isn't.
No, you won't. You know all these lists that you see online. You look up best wide receiver of all time. There's not a single one that doesn't have Jerry Rice on top of it.
And you know who the second best receiver of all time is? Probably Larry Fitzgerald.
Yeah.
I mean, you could argue Moss, too, but yeah, others.
You'll make arguments.
But Fitzgerald, that'd be a bigger argument. Who's the second best?
Yeah.
Because there's no way it really shouldn't be an argument about who the best is.
No.
No. And then people already arguing about who's a better tight end, Kansas City, Gonzalez or Kelsey. I'm like, whatever. They're both Hall of Famers. They will be. Whatever. Skylar Thompson, let's shift to college football. Skylar Thompson is not going to play the rest of this season.
Skylar's going to be done for the year. He had surgery last week on an upper body injury, so unfortunately his season is over with, but we're going to rally around Will Howard and Nick Ost.
All right, so Will Howard, your quarterback going forward. Here's the interesting thing about Skylar Thompson is normally this would be it. He'd be done, but this year's a free year of eligibility, so Skylar Thompson could come back next year for another year at Kansas State University. And I was asking Dusty this yesterday. I said, if Skylar Thompson says he wants to come back and play next year, does K-State welcome him back?
And my answer was, it's all predicated on how this season goes for Will Howard, I really feel. Mm-hmm. If Will Howard has a lot of success and this team continues on the path they're on right now, we'll just say that, right?
And you got Jake Rubley coming in as a highly recruited quarterback.
I lean more and more towards Skylar might be a graduate transfer somewhere else. Mm-hmm. I don't think you just say, no, we don't want you back.
Right.
You try to work it out. You try to figure out the best scenario for your team moving forward. Now, if Will Howard struggles sometimes and you know, there's issues there, then maybe you kind of entertain, come back and we'll get Will. Because Will doesn't lose this year either.
That's right.
And so
that's another wild card
to this. So come back and we'll get Will ready to go. And, mm-hmm. and he can teach and he can learn a little bit more even than he already has under you and just kind of teach him the ropes for when you're gone than the next year. So, but I really feel like Will Howard has a really good year here. I don't see it. Skylar coming back.
I'm leaning that way too. But as you said, if Howard struggles,
it's got to be.
You don't lose your eligibility. You can still have Howard active. And normally you'd be like, well, if Skylar came back, well then Will could redshirt next year because he's gonna have to burn up eligibility this year for 1 year. Well, you don't have to worry about that at all because it's not any eligibility loss this year. It's a free year. Thus is why Skylar could come back and why Will Howard wouldn't have to redshirt next year.
Yeah.
Yeah. So, I'm with you. I think it's to be determined, obviously. But it's a bummer for Skylar. I mean,
no, 100%.
He's enjoying playing for Coach
Kid Kleiman. Has put a lot of time and work and effort into it, and to have it in this way maybe is not.
But the good thing is, like you said, he can either go to K-State next year and play some more, or go somewhere else. And normally, a senior has this happen; they're done. He actually has a second chance because of 2020.
Yeah.
So there is that. There is a silver lining for
him. And Skylar probably would be able to get a medical redshirt even if he wasn't, if this year didn't count for eligibility. So that'd be interesting to see how it all plays out, though, for sure. But, right now I can't make a definitive answer of yes, he will be back or no, he won't.
Yeah, I don't think anybody can.
No.
This is interesting. I found this. I want to play this for you. Toby Rowland, the voice of Oklahoma Sooners, was with us before the season began, and I asked him about the sleeper in the Big 12. Now, this is something he said well before Oklahoma and K-State played each other. I found this. Forgot I had it. Listen to this. Toby Rowland, the voice of Oklahoma Sooners, our guest today on the Sports Ticket. Anybody in this conference that you think people are sleeping on, maybe Iowa State is that team, but is there somebody other than the ones you mentioned that you think could push their way up near the top?
Kansas State is always kind of the team that we always overlook in the preseason, and they overachieve, and you thought maybe that was just a Bill Snyder characteristic, but man, they up and beat Oklahoma again last year, and I kind of like the attitude that Kleiman brought with him. I think he fits well with the way they recruit and the way you have to play at Kansas State to contend. So that's the team I think we always push down too far in these preseason talks. And it's a little bit scary that Oklahoma gets them right out of the gate.
Yeah.
Big 12 play on September 26th.
A little bit scary that they get him out of the gate. I mean, Toby Rowland was worried about that game. And he had a reason to be worried about that game and talked about K-State's always pick lower than they should be. And they always have to play with a chip on their shoulder. I mean, when I watch K-State football teams right now, I don't think they're a lot different than Bill Snyder's teams.
No, not now.
They're not that. I mean, they're a little bit different. Don't get me wrong.
Scheme-wise, they are, but other than...
It's the same... you know, when Bill Snyder was winning football games and overachieving, they got special teams touchdowns, blocked punts, return kicks, got defensive touchdowns. They ran the ball more than they threw the ball. They controlled the clock. I mean, that's what Chris Kleiman's doing. Everybody's acting like Chris Kleiman reinvented the wheel. He didn't.
No.
I mean, he's a really good coach, and I liked him when he got hired, contrary to what some people, because they wanted that sexy name. I think they feel pretty good with him instead of Seth Luttrell or Brent Venables right now. So I think it's worked out. But he hasn't reinvented the wheel. He has a system. He believes in it. And it's not a lot different than Bill Snyder, other than he, you know, sticks with a quarterback. Although Bill, you know, sometimes in his career he did, sometimes at the end he didn't. But the difference, obviously, to me, in Bill Snyder 2.0 versus Chris Kleiman's tenure is Kleiman on the recruiting trail, it's not even close.
Mm.
I mean, he's getting guys. I mean, some of these freshmen, I mean, this, man, there's a bright future ahead for Kansas State football. You got the Rubley kid coming in at quarterback, Will Howard, you got Deuce Vaughn, that T.J. Smith, I love him, and a freshman. They got the T. Denson, they like T. Denson. They got left tackle, true freshman, played some the other day. I mean, K-State's got maybe their best overall, depth-wise, or the most talent they've had out of a class coming out of high school to be true freshmen than they've ever had before. Now, have they had better individual players that were freshmen or coming and recruiting in a JUCO? Yeah, sure. But I'm talking overall, some of these guys coming in and playing, and you don't have anything to worry about losing eligibility, so you can do this trial and error type of thing and play these guys, and you don't lose any eligibility, and so far it's working.
Yeah, that was what I was going to say was the biggest difference, too, is, you know, he's a younger guy and can relate. You know, we talk about how much does that matter? Because we always...
For me, it would matter a lot as a younger person.
As K-State fans, he always tried to justify that it doesn't really matter. Yeah. It's Bill Snyder. It doesn't matter.
A lot of young people didn't know what Bill Snyder did earlier in his career.
But, I mean, when you really analyze it and think about it, and what guys are going into homes? Are you taking Chris Kleiman and... You know, Van Malone and Joe Klanderman and, you know, these younger guys. Courtney Messingham is a younger guy than Del Miller going into a house, right?
Yeah.
And more, probably more relatable on what he wants to accomplish with his offense and things like that.
That's
the biggest issue you have. And I think that helps tremendously to have younger guys going into homes and relating a little bit more.
Well, let's not kid anybody. Bill Snyder wasn't walking into people's homes.
No.
I mean, he had younger people going out. Colin Klein was going out there.
Yeah.
I mean, so he still had younger people going out there. The difference is...
And that was late,
Snyder,
though. Like, Del Miller going into a lot of homes.
I know, late.
Yeah.
But Snyder wasn't going in those homes.
We
know that. Just like Bobby Bowden never did that stuff towards in his career either. SEC has a postponement. The SEC's gone 3 weeks without having any games impacted by COVID-19 positive test or contact tracing, but that streak has come to an end. Vanderbilt's road game against Missouri, slated for Saturday, has been postponed. They will reschedule it for December the 12th, as the Commodores have been dealing with COVID-19 issues for several weeks and played with only 56 players on active roster last week in a loss to South Carolina. SEC rules state the teams must have at least 53 active scholarship players available each week, and they also, the rule has minimum player availability guidelines for specific positions. So Vanderbilt, Missouri was really shorthanded too and beat LSU anyway.
Mm-hmm.
So Vanderbilt and Missouri postponed till December the 12th. The Major League Baseball playoffs. This Margot kid for Tampa Bay, well, he used the bat and his glove. Here's his bat.
Manuel Margot, former Padre, playing for the Rays, and he sends one to center field. Hit well on the run. Springer, he's at the track, and this ball is going to be gone! Manuel Margot, a three-run shot in the first inning.
And he had an unbelievable catch going over the fence and the rail. You see that? And he used to be a Padre, so he knows what Petco Park's like there in San Diego. That probably helped him. Crazy catch. Great home run, obviously. And the Rays are up 2-0 on the Astros, and everybody in the world rejoices except Astro fans.
Yes.
Because we're tired of the Astros and what they did and how they cheated and really got a slap on the wrist. Rays beat the Astros 4-2. They're up 2-0 in that best of seven. And then there's the Braves and Dodgers, and right now the Braves, I don't know. I think the Braves are going to win the series the way it's going. I mean, before it started, I thought, you know what? The Braves don't give up runs. Their pitching is fantastic. And last night, the Braves won one game going to the ninth, but it changed with the long ball.
That is hit deep into left center field. Back at the wall. It's gone. Austin Riley has put the Atlanta Braves on top here in the ninth with a home run on Blake Treinen. That is well hit into left center field. Back at the wall. It's gone. Ozzie Albies, a two-run shot.
Braves with four in the ninth, and here's what happens when you get in the playoffs. The Royals saw it in 14 and 15. It really applies every year now. Baseball's a different game in the postseason. You don't see starting pitchers go more than, what, five, six innings anymore, unless there's a comfortable lead.
Mm-hmm.
It comes down to your bullpen. Now, your starters can lose the game for you, but I don't think your starters really win you the game anymore in the playoffs. They can keep you in the game, but they can lose you the game. You know, they can give up five in the first and be done, and they can lose you the game. But as long as they only give up, Edison Volquez is a great example of that. Volquez would go five or six innings through Royals and give up, what, two runs, four hits, walk a couple. Not brilliant and awesome, but still good. And the Royals be down 2-1, 2-2, up 3-2. They had a chance. Yep. And that's what happens with the Braves-Dodgers. Both got really good starting pitching, but the Braves' bullpen right now appears better. The Dodgers don't even know who the closer is because Kenley Jansen's been struggling. So to me right there, I've changed my tune. I said the Dodgers are going to win it before this all started. I've changed my mind. I'm taking the Braves in this series. And by the way, I made this decision yesterday before the game because I saw the Braves shut out the teams four times in five games. They've got the better bullpen. They know who their closer is. The Dodgers, once I heard the Dodgers weren't even sure who their closer was going to be before the game yesterday, I'm like, they're in trouble. If you don't know who your closer is at this point in the season, it's a major issue because it impacts everything else you do in preparing to who you hand the ball off to in the ninth inning. It shuffles up your rotation, per se, in your bullpen. Because remember, Ned had a seventh inning Herrera, eighth inning is Davis, ninth inning Holland. You know, seventh inning is Madsen, eighth inning Herrera, ninth inning is Davis. Now, if suddenly Davis had all kinds of problems, guess what? Now what do you do? But he didn't, of course.
Yeah.
Thankfully.
He does now, but thankfully he didn't then.
No, he didn't then. Braves win 5-1, so they're up 1-0. Could be a Braves-Rays World Series, just like everybody predicted.
Yeah.
Kershaw's on the mound.
I was thinking
tonight
about that yesterday. It's like it's the best year to have a Braves-Rays World Series, right? Two towns that hardly ever support their teams the way they should, so fans can't, you know, a lot of fans can't go anyway. So it's the Braves are a little better than that, obviously, than some teams in Atlanta of getting support. But
there were fans allowed at the NLCS.
Yeah, there were. I saw that. Yeah.
Yeah. I don't know how many they allowed. I didn't.
It wasn't a lot, but I could see plenty of them in there,
which is cool.
Yeah.
I'm glad to see that. Braves, Dodgers, Kershaw. Boy, if he has a bad outing tonight, once again, it'll be, Kershaw can't pitch in the playoffs. He's been great in the playoffs so far. But a lot of pressure on Clayton Kershaw making all that money. Braves-Dodgers game two of the best of seven on FS1. That is tonight at 5:05. Braves trying to go up 2-0. And the Astros and the Rays game three tonight at 7:40 on TBS. The Rays trying to take that commanding 3-0 lead. And we certainly know there's only one team in Major League Baseball history that's been down 3-0 that came back to win a series. That was?
Boston Red Sox. Against? 2004 against the New York Yankees.
Ah, just did that. Just a rib clover if he's listening. Just did that for
it
those
burns.
Yankees fans. Yeah. Sounds like a personal problem. Okay, so moving on. Major League Baseball playoffs will continue tonight. Oh, man, sad story to pass along to close out the show. We've lost another baseball legend. 2020 has been a bad year for Major League Baseball losing Hall of Famers. We lost Al Kaline earlier in the year, then Tom Seaver, Lou Brock, Bob Gibson, Whitey Ford. We lost, I think it was last Thursday or Friday, outstanding pitcher for the Yankees. And now, yesterday, we lost Joe Morgan. Joe Morgan, for some of you younger people out there, maybe didn't get to see him play. I didn't get to see him play a lot. But I remember him as a broadcaster on ESPN Sunday Night Baseball and did a nice job and enjoyed him. And he wasn't one of those guys that made it all about him on the broadcast either. Joe Morgan was a Baseball Hall of Famer, two-time World Series champion, two-time National League MVP. He passed away on Sunday. He was 77 years of age. Morgan played a total of 22 Major League Baseball seasons, eight seasons with the Reds. During his time in Cincinnati, he became a key member of the Big Red Machine, winning back-to-back World Series titles in 75 and 76. Morgan also won back-to-back NL MVP awards both of those years. Furthermore, Morgan finished in the top 10 of voting for the National League MVP for five straight seasons with the Reds. His time with the Reds, and remember, he didn't play his whole career with the Reds. He played eight seasons with the Reds. In those eight seasons, he ranked second all-time in on-base percentage. He's in the top five on the Reds' all-time record for on-base plus slugging, stolen bases, and also finished his baseball career with 10 All-Star appearances and five Gold Glove awards. That's right. He just wasn't a one-trick pony. He could hit the ball. He could hit for average. He could steal bases, had some pop in the bat, and, oh, yeah, he could play defense. He had five Gold Gloves. The Reds retired his uniform number 8 in 1987. Hall of Famer and Reds teammate Johnny Bench said in a statement, and I quote, "Joe Morgan wasn't just the best second baseman in baseball history. He was the best player I ever saw and one of the best people I've ever known." Wow. Those are some strong words coming from a Hall of Famer himself. Joe Morgan passing away at the age of 77, Sunday. And that means that we've lost six Major League Baseball Hall of Famers in 2020, and we still have 2.5 months to go. Dang you, 2020.
2020 is just, yeah, let's just move on.
We just, yeah, let's move on. I saw somebody put a meme out there and goes, what if 2021 says, hold my beer, 2020? Oh, please, no. Please don't do that. No, no. Don't. But you know what? The Chiefs won the Super Bowl in 2020, so it's not a complete loss. Bronco fans are like, oh, yeah, see? Prove my point. Been a horrible year. Chiefs win the Super Bowl and all hell froze over. Pandemic and everything else, all because the Chiefs finally won the Super Bowl. Yeah, I don't know. Whatever. I'll deal with it. It is what it is, right?
Yes.
It is what it is. All right, once again, we got some volleyball tonight. Live video stream, nckssports.com, the Bullet Trojan channel. Bullet Lady Trojans taking on El Saline and Sacred Heart down at the El Saline Triangular starting about 5 o'clock tonight. Just remember, Jerry Rice is the greatest wide receiver in the history of the game. Just remember that. Take it to the bank. Chalk it up. And Rafael Nadal is the greatest player on clay. And Dusty Dynas is the greatest sportscaster in North Central Kansas radio history. There's no denying it.
State, regional, and national sports talk on your schedule. The Sports Ticket Podcast. Subscribe via Apple, Google, and TuneIn Podcasts or sunflowerstateradio.com.